Lunch with Pippa Hudson.
And now,
Consumer Talk featuring Wendy Nola.
Wendy's standing by with lots of consumer tips and tricks. And the only tip and trick I want to hear about today, Wendy, is the video I'm looking at on Twitter of a German pineapple peeling and chopping machine, which has been installed in a supermarket that is making it so beautifully easy to buy your fresh pineapple off the shelf, but still walk out the store with it nicely cut up and peeled for you.
Yeah, because it's such a horrible thing to peel, and you can buy them peeled, but you pay a premium for the convenience of that.
And if you do,
nice to just be able to put it in this beautiful industrial-looking machine. I mean, I'm thinking that's how it's done in a canning factory.
Probably.
And they've acquired one of these machines. And there's also for children, especially, well, not only children, but,
the
fun of watching it, yes.
I can't take my eyes off. It's clearly in Germany because it's ananas being high. I've just lost the text here, but it's Scheiben oder Stücke Wahlen. Oh, do you want it into rings or into pieces even? Wow, okay.
Pippa.
So you can choose rings or chunks. I'm fascinated by this. Okay, but we're not talking about peeling pineapples. We are talking about all kinds of clever ways to do other consumer things today. It's a continuation of last week's show, which was packed with tips and tricks on just avoiding common consumer pitfalls and less common ones as well. So we thought we'd carry on this week. And as we did last week, if you have personal experience of the issue we're talking about or want to add to the trick or tip or share a personal experience, please do send through a WhatsApp to 072-567-1567. Wendy, there are quite a number of tips on your list that relate to cars. So I thought let's start there and deal with all of the car issues. And I want to start with the airbag question. We've just been talking with Ernest about safety features in cars. And how, we need to make sure that the cars we are buying have got decent facilities, safety features.
Cheap as it is, did at least have dual
airbags.
Yes.
But the warning is the airbag is only as good as its installation, and that if it's not properly installed or if you are sitting in the wrong place when it deploys, it can actually end up being the cause of harm. And I don't know if you caught on Monday, Trudy Brookman was with us, Wendy.
I was in Joburg on Monday, so
she was talking about unscrupulous car dealerships and sometimes the very dodgy on the cheap repair jobs that get done. And after that show, a listener sent me a photograph of one such example where an airbag had been taped back into place with masking tape.
I've heard of that many times.
And I mean, I couldn't believe what I was looking at, but I was looking at an actual photograph of it. I do believe you. But this is a very good demonstration. The airbag is only as good as the way it's been properly installed.
Can I just add, I've had cases as well because, after a big accident, to replace those airbags is massively expensive. They've now deployed, right?
Yeah.
So they just don't put them back. And you're buying a model of car that supposedly has airbags, but you don't have
any. They're not there. Okay, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, let's just talk a little bit about why they're there and what happens when they don't work the way they're meant to.
Okay, so the airbag's main job is to prevent you and your passengers. Some, of course, have side airbags as well, so it would be passengers not only in the front but in the back, from colliding with the car's steering wheel, windscreen, dashboard, front seats, etc., causing massive harm or death. But if they deploy at 320 kilometers an hour, which is more or less the speed that they come out as, they could harm or even kill you if you're not sitting properly. And that is with your chest about 25 centimeters away from the steering wheel where the airbags are situated. Now, I have to say, I'm so aware of this. I spent 15 years having a tandem career as a motoring journalist.
Yeah.
So I'm very, that's probably why there's so many car
tips,
car related things here. And I make a point of looking how people are sitting in their cars, especially when you're stuck in traffic and, which I am on the way home every Wednesday. And so many women in particular, I think it's for a sense of security. They almost hug the steering wheel. There's very little space between the steering wheel and their chests.
Okay.
And yes, in the old days, you probably, even before you had airbags, you in most cases couldn't avoid it because there wasn't much that was adjustable in the car. But now, even the base models, you can adjust the seat front and back. You can adjust the steering wheel, not just up and down, but for rake. That's forward and back.
Okay.
A lot of people don't actually know that. So there's a little lever on the side in most cars, and you get to
maneuver it around.
To maneuver it towards you or away from you, not just up and down, which is what used to be the only maneuverability you would have on a steering wheel. So
I'm
you
one
really
of those.
Should, are you?
I've got to be honest, down here at 5'4", because I have to sit fairly close to the steering wheel in order for my feet to reach the pedals.
But you can fiddle around.
But maybe
you're in
I need
jazz.
To fiddle around with my...
I'm sure your steering wheel adjusts up and in and out.
I will be checking it immediately after the show.
Yeah, you really should have that gap. And okay. I know it's a very hard thing to do. If you've spent decades driving in a certain way, it's going to feel very strange and
vulnerable.
Yes. But you need to understand that that airbag is going to cause you a lot of harm if you're too close to it.
Same if you're the passenger sitting in the passenger
yep.
seat with your feet up on
That's
the dashboard.
That's another huge no-no.
Yeah.
Did I put it in
you
my
You did
prep?
Put it in there, yes.
It's going to do terrible things to your ankles, your feet. It's a very dangerous thing to do. And I must admit, on a long trip back in the day, I would do that.
Yep.
To the irritation of various people. But men do not like
me
that.
Putting dust on his yes. dashboard, so I take
but,
him down.
But the real yeah. reason if there's an airbag there, when which most cars now there would be, is that airbag's going to shoot out of that very spot where your leg is sitting and really...
cause huge damage.
Yeah.
Okay, so make sure that they've been installed correctly and reinstalled if you are buying a car which has previously been in an accident. I want to add one extra point here, and Wendy, that's for people going home with their first baby in an infant car seat.
Yeah.
The prevailing wisdom is obviously best practice is to have the car seat on the back seat of the car. But I understand, particularly with a newborn,
you want to look at
people
them.
Like to have them in eye shot. If you are going to put, and South African law doesn't actually specify this, but if you're going to put your baby carrier car seat on the front seat, firstly, it's essential that it must be facing backwards, that the
yes.
baby is looking towards
yes.
the back of the car. And secondly, please check if your car has a front passenger airbag, because if it does, you've got to deactivate it.
And not all cars have the ability to deactivate,
it. So if you can't, you cannot risk putting your baby there.
No.
Because if that deploys, Wendy, it makes the baby and the car seat into a projectile and smashes
and
them into the
back
seat.
All those car seats have those warnings. Huge.
Yeah. But that's why they're there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it's such a horrible one
that.
Because, I mean, I'm a mom and I do remember those early days. You want to have constant eyes on the child.
Line, yeah.
It's a really difficult one. I mean, in my day, I mean, I was born in the 60s, so we were just slung in the back seat in
you
a carry cot.
You didn't even wear a car seat, yeah, a car belt, seat belt.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so please just be very mindful that if you are going to have a baby on the front seat, you must make sure that the airbag has been deactivated. And if you cannot deactivate the airbag, you cannot have the baby there. Finish and clock.
No.
End off. I know all of the big car safety campaigns will echo us on that, so please be double-checking that. Okay, airbags aside, the next warning is of another kind of potential harm-causing.
Yeah.
I want to use the word vulture. Maybe I shouldn't.
With all,
it's tow trucks, Wendy.
Yeah, all due credit to the fine, upstanding tow truck operations that do tremendous work.
And they do exist.
On the
yes.
roads, they do exist. I always say that as a preface to this warning. And I don't hear about those lovely interactions, those lovely cases. I hear about all the scams that happen, and I hear about them from people all over the country on a very regular basis. So you've had an accident on a busy road. Your car needs to be towed from the scene. And a typical scenario would have a tow truck or two or three immediately on the scene urging you to let them hook up your car. What do? You ignore them. You go to your phone contacts and you call your insurance company. You've already saved. If you haven't, please do it now. You've saved, if you are insured, you've saved your insurer's number to call for this specific purpose, found out what it is, have it in there, and you make the call yourself to tell them what's happened and ask them which either to send someone or to ask whether the ones on scene are accredited
acceptable.
With them
yeah.
because otherwise you're paying for your own tow. But worse than that, your car gets hijacked, and I mean that, by one of these operators. They ask you to sign something. You're a little bit traumatized, especially if it's in the evening. You're not reading everything before you sign. You don't know where your car's been towed. You don't know what you've signed for. So the first shock is that it's an exorbitant amount, 7,000, 8,000, probably more. And when you found out where your car is, it's already racked up 2 or 3 days, massive storage fees. And now people are in for, 10,000 or whatever,
yeah.
and every day it gets more, and every day it's less affordable for them to get their car. And a lot of people lose their cars this way. It
yeah.
is absolutely horrendous. So one of the big scams is you're a bit shocked. This has happened, and this very kind tow truck operator says, which insurance company are you with? And you tell them and they say, okay, we'll don't worry, we'll phone them for you. And they phone their mate and they say, yes, okay, right. Okay, they authorize it and they take your car. Mm-hmm. When you get hold of your insurance
they've never had
company
that
later, no. And yeah. they definitely don't accredit that particular service provider. Two-thirds of the cars on our roads
are not insured.
Yeah, two-thirds are not insured. So if you aren't insured, there is some safety net for you. There are two towing associations. One is SATRA, the South African Towing and Recovery Association. They have a 24-hour hotline that you can phone and get details of a SATRA member in the area. So at least you have some comeback if something's wrong. And there's a second one, its name I've forgotten, but if you just Google Tow Truck Association, it'll come up. And have one or both of those numbers. I've checked them. Every time I give this advice, I check them, I make the call.
They're still working.
And ask,
okay.
Yes, they're still able to give that advice 24 hours.
Thank you so much for that advice. Wendy, going back to the airbags, immediate response from several people. Megan's saying, I'm short, so I can't help but be close to the steering wheel, and I'm always worried about what would happen to my short body should it get hit by the airbag.
Put your steering wheel...
Push it further back,
yeah.
Okay. And then Jana saying, thank you. I'm driving home from work. Just moved my seat back a few centimetres to leave room for my airbag.
Yes,
I wasn't aware that hugging the steering wheel posed such a danger.
Oh, so I want to scream at people in the traffic, but they don't generally respond well to a busybody doing that. But yeah, I try and talk to people in my circles about this a lot.
Spread the word.
Yeah.
Spread the word. Yeah, thank you so much. Somebody saying, we were told if airbags are deployed, the car is a write-off. Is that always the case?
No.
No.
It depends very much on the value of the car at the time. So in my case, I have an 18-year-old Subaru Forester, which I adore. I've had it since new. And so if that had to happen in my car, the value of the car in rands, it's huge value to me in functionality and sentimentality, but the actual rand value is very low. So it wouldn't take much. It would take much less than an airbag deploying for my car to be written off, because the cost of the repairs would easily go over. It varies from insurer to insurer, okay. But it's between 65-70% around there. Once the repairs reach 70% odd of your value of your car at the time, they will write it off because it doesn't make it. It's called
economic
they call
sense.
It BER, beyond economic repair.
Economic repair,
yes.
Being the operative word.
Yes.
Okay, thank you for that explanation. Right, still with cars, Wendy. You want to talk about tyres expiring?
Yes, so I must admit, I think I know more than the average person about tyres, but it wasn't until fairly recently, 5 years or so, that I realised and found out through personal experience, because I had quite low mileage on my car at the time when I moved to Cape Town,
yep.
And I thought the tyres were fine, but in fact, no. So why I'm talking about this now is I recently saw an ad on my local neighborhood WhatsApp group for a set of tires which someone had removed from her car 7 years ago when she bought it. And she obviously wanted bigger tires or fancier tires or whatever. And she'd been storing them ever since. And she advertised them at a fairly good price. And I private messaged her to say, you know, do you know that tyres generally come with a lifespan of 4 or 5 years from the date of manufacture? The AA, Automobile Association, warns, do not use expired tyres. They are likely to burst, especially when running in hot weather, because the rubber component may have hardened and cracked.
Sure.
So this is another thing everybody should know. I just love sharing car info.
Yeah.
How do you date a tyre then? Well, it's via a series of four numbers imprinted on the tyre. So the first two numbers are the week of the year, the second two, the year. So a tyre manufactured in, say, the first week of February this year would have 0524 on it. So 05 is the fifth week of the year, and 24 is 2024.
And a tyre that was manufactured on the 30th of December this year will be... 5324
because
it's a leap year.
Yes.
5324
Yes,
okay.
Exactly. It's just fun to know and go and look at your tyres. Also, when you're buying tyres, you know,
you
just
don't
have
know
a
to
little look.
For that. Yes, I did not know that tyres expire. I have had the experience of having a tyre burst and having an insurance claim rejected because the tyre tread had worn down.
Oh, that's another one.
Too
yes.
much, and that's in my case, I was actually able to successfully fight it because the car had been roadworthy a few weeks earlier.
Oh, lovely. Okay.
But
so
it's
you
something that you don't really think about being
don't.
A reason to repudiate a claim until it happens to you, and you suddenly learn very fast to keep a very close eye on how your tyres are wearing.
And always, please, when you go to fill up, just spend a few minutes doing all the checks. My father brought me up this way.
Yeah.
You have the tire pressure checked and have the oil and water and all that. Just do it. It's just a few minutes. Tip the person.
Properly, please.
I mean, these things people do for themselves in other countries, and we just have the most wonderful and the service culture is just so magnificent. I have such respect and gratitude for the attendants that we have at our fuel stations. Mm. And just do those checks, please, because it not only before a long trip, but just at every time you fill up, just so that you know your pressure's not too high, too low. It just reduces the risk of something horrible happening to your tyres and to you.
Thank you for the reminder on that, Wendy. Okay, let's move into the retail environment next. And you want to share a very recent case study that amply demonstrates the warning that you shouldn't make assumptions about pricing and price labelling and what certain styles of labelling signify. It's something you warn us about every Black Friday. Don't just take it for granted that because it says something's on special, the price is actually discounted. Wendy, tell us what happened to make you raise this particular issue.
Okay, so a video was widely shared on X, complete with suitably mysterious music backing. It was quite well produced, I must say. And it showed a woman in a macro store removing red tags on the shelves where various makes of baby car seats were being merchandised. And she was taking these, you know, those tags are in a sort of plastic container thing. So she was sliding the red one out, and underneath, same size, was the identical thing, but in yellow. And the price was also identical. And her comment was, I think there were about three or four different examples. She was walking around doing that. And her comment, written comment on the video was, macro is a scam sometimes.
Ooh,
okay. Strong words. I took that up with Macro, and my comment was, there is no overt claim that the price has been discounted, but consumers have learned to associate the color red on shelf labeling with a promotional discounted price, because when that happens, they do normally shout to us in red. And so over a lifetime as a consumer, you come to make that connection straight away without any words.
Yeah.
And so I said, why else would the standard label be covered with a red one bearing the same price? And the answer was quite interesting. We use red price tickets to indicate that a product is on promotion or that the product is being discontinued.
That's interesting.
We are currently discontinuing the baby hard goods category at Macro. So they'll obviously, I think that means they'll be selling the nappies and all the rest of that. But the actual hardware, the prams and the baby
seats.
And the car seats and the booster seats. Yeah. Discontinued product doesn't, as in this case, necessarily attract a discount. But so my point was that consumers think so. So that is, you're telling me that's red to, as an in-house
indicator that it's coming to
for
the end.
Staff, because consumers would see red and not think it's going being discontinued. They see red and think, oh, well, this is on a special price, right? Okay. So anyway, the comment was, we need to relook at the process.
Okay, but thanks for flagging for us that if you are shopping in a macro and you see a red tag,
it might not mean
that it's on special.
But
it could mean it is.
So you've got to check. I mean, that's quite a lot of hard work. So let's hope that relooking does result
maybe
in something less confusing.
Maybe they need to move it to green instead for the soon to be discontinued or something that's simple.
Yes, it's going.
Okay. But again, you know, especially if you're buying an item like that, and some of those are very big ticket items to buy a car seat and a pram, it's a big expense. So do your homework on what the price should be.
Yeah. So you know
and
if it's a special.
So going into the shop, you know whether you're getting a good deal or not. Okay. Staying in the shops, if you think your latest box of large eggs looks a little bit smaller than large, Wendy, you can get out your scale and check it for yourself.
Yeah. So I don't know how many people know that egg weights are regulated. It's not just up to the supplier to think, okay, well, this looks extra large, I'll put it in the extra large box. So, for example, and the regulations are around weight. So eggs labeled large must be more than 51 grams in weight, and those labeled extra large must be more than 59 grams. So that tells me 60 plus. Right?
Yeah. Okay.
More than
59 and a half upwards.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. 59.1 upwards. So a listener recently discovered she bought two separate different brands of extra large eggs, and they both weighed more than 59 grams. So tick the box, but some were 59.1, 59.2. Mm. And another brand, also labeled extra large and also on the box saying more than 59 grams, weighed about 80 grams. So there's a 20 gram variance, and you can certainly see it in the size. And I've seen that certain brands of extra large eggs look a lot smaller than others. So I'm not going to name the ones that, because I mean, there's nothing illegal about it. They were just met the legal weight requirement. And I have asked for a response, which hasn't come yet. I've asked last week, and it's a major supermarket group. So okay. A bit disappointing. But the one that was 80, the ones that were around 80 grams were Food Lovers extra large eggs.
Okay.
So that might not always be the case. But I mean, those are more like jumbo or super jumbo. That they were putting in an extra.
Well, I've got the list in front of me from the actual Department of Agriculture and Fisheries. And just in case you were interested, okay, small must be more than 33 grams.
I don't know when I last saw small.
No, I haven't either. I haven't seen a medium for that matter either. More
me
than
neither.
43 grams. Large, which is fairly typical, has to weigh over 51. Extra large, 59. Over 59. Mm. And jumbo, more than 66 grams. So you're absolutely right in saying that those Food Lovers ones were actually jumbo size.
Yeah.
In an extra large box.
So just open the, you know, if you want to, like, I only buy organic eggs. I think it's for most people, it would be the first inroad into buying organic.
And free range.
It's a bit of a price.
Yep.
Sorry, not organic.
Free range.
There is quite a bit of a price differential, but so my choice is usually limited through that anyway.
Yeah.
But if you're not buying online and you're in a store, it is a carefully, you don't damage the eggs, but just have a comparison, little look at sizes. You might be quite surprised.
Okay, thanks for the heads up. Now, the next one might prove controversial, Wendy.
No.
While we're doing the monthly shopping,
I'm very
let's
brave.
Talk about fabric softener. I'm completely okay with what you're about to tell us, because I actually stopped using fabric softener altogether about a year ago.
Me too, about that time.
For allergy reasons primarily, in my case. But you are going to tell us that there's quite a substantial body of evidence to suggest it is, in fact, quite a waste of money.
So I'm going to say, don't shoot the messenger, don't come at me. I know that South Africans in particular are very married to the idea that this particular smell of whatever your brand is of fabric softener, kind of you make a connection with the fresh laundry.
Yes.
It's clean. It's fresh, which is not based in reality, because washing your clothes is what makes them fresh. They don't need the signifier of a smell to say my laundry is now lovely and fresh. And I don't know about you, but I have some friends, especially when our kids were young, you could smell those kids coming. whatever, you know what I'm talking about. And then you get those people that put them in the car as well, so the cars also smell like this is a clean, fresh car.
Yes.
Right, okay. So according to both Australia's consumer watchdog Choice and the USA's Consumer Reports, both bodies do extensive research in all sorts of things, including this topic. They, and I'm sure the UK's, which is the same, they, in brief, say that fabric softeners are a waste of money. They can irritate sensitive skin. They aren't great for your washing machine because they contribute to a gunky buildup known as scrud. I don't know if you'd ever heard that term before. Which can be deposited onto your clothes, and I've certainly seen that.
Yes.
They also reduce the water absorbency of towels and fitness gear as a side effect of the softness. So the softer your towels come out, the less useful they'll actually be for doing their job, drying you. The only real plus, according to Consumer Reports, is they are really good at making your clothes smell like your granny's house. So use it, don't use it, in both sense of that.
The most important, okay, so obviously for somebody who suffers from allergies like I do, the sensitive skin is a big one. But that buildup of the scrud, as they call it, is a big one to consider.
Yeah.
And it makes a lot
it's
of sense when
that flake.
Little residue,
yeah, that residue
that's building up lining the pipes of your washing machine. And then you see it in your laundry every now and then. There are certain marks on shirts and jerseys in particular
then you have
seem to cling onto them.
Do that special cleanse through your washing machine, which uses water and electricity. And I have to say that the companies, the manufacturers of these products do a very good job at perpetuating this thing, because it's all about the smell, right? Perpetuating this link between beautiful, fresh laundry, doing a good job with, you know, you have to use this product.
And loving your family and caring
loving
for
your family.
That's
what you do.
That's the messaging you
it's
get.
Always that. I use vinegar as a softener, and Then I just add a few drops of whatever essential oil I want. Obviously not a lot. And by the time the washing's dry, you don't smell it. But during the laundry process, I don't like the smell of vinegar. Okay. And I just, I'd rather it's cinnamon or it's tea tree or it's rosemary or it's whatever. I just have a whole collection and I chop and change. And that works for me. As I say, use, don't use. But this is what the experts are saying.
I'd be, I was about to say, I'd be thrilled to hear from listeners what they think about this. And already Zuki has messaged and say, yes, thank you, Wendy. I stopped using fabric softener ages ago. I just didn't see the point, especially considering you get 2-in-1 detergents that claim to have fabric softener included. Zuki, I'm with you. As I said, I have not missed it. I have never once put something on and gone, oh, it feels uncomfortable. I wish it was softer. Literally never once in the last year. I am also having a quiet giggle at the memory of I once borrowed a boyfriend at varsity. I borrowed my boyfriend's jersey because I was getting cold and I wanted to wash it and return it to him all nice and clean. So I put it in my laundry and it came out smelling of Stay Soft. And he was horrified.
There you go.
I thought I was doing such a nice thing and being such a good girlfriend, showing it back carefully laundered. Look, it smells like a Stay Soft jersey now. Anyway, so I'd be interested to hear anecdotally if anybody else has given up on fabric softener or if you feel you'd like to make a case for why it's still necessary. Please
smell.
Send us a WhatsApp. Yeah, is there any other reason besides it smelling lovely? 0725671567. Some nice advice from Sarah. She says, on the price checking issue, we were making the point, just don't take it for granted that because they say it's on special, it is on special, or because the labeling looks like it's on special. Sarah says it's really worth checking prices on Serval Tracker online. She does it anytime she's buying something on a platform like Takealot. She says it shows you all past prices for the item that you are considering buying. Have you ever come across them, Wendy?
No, how does that spell?
S-E-R-V-A-L.
Thank you. I will certainly check that out immediately.
Okay.
When we're off air. And something like that. There are other price checking ones. Price Check, I think, is one of them.
Okay.
And it's particularly useful ahead of Black Friday, which is some time away yet.
Yeah, but we'll.
Yeah. But any time when you're wanting to buy, especially a big ticket item.
Thanks for that. And thanks for the tips, Sarah. One we'll have to check out. Philippa, going back to the airbags quickly. Philippa's asking, is there any way to tell whether a hire car's airbags are intact and effective?
No.
Other than asking them and trusting that they'll be honest with you.
At the counter. Yeah. Mm. I will say, though, that those cars are usually low mileage. And if there is an accident, I can tell you that they make the customer pay. So they're done properly. So I think that would be a low risk of you hiring a car with no or dysfunctional airbags because, as I say, they make their customers pay.
Okay.
For any accidents or whatever, and the cars are fairly new.
Boom. Okay. 6, 7, 8 or so fabric softener responses already. I stopped using fabric softener many years ago, says Jay in Takai. Understood that it was not in the end good for the fabric. Somebody else saying, this is Sandra in Claremont. I hate fabric softener. I only buy it to put in my laundry cupboard because it smells nice.
Okay. Well,
as Nick does in his car, he does the trick of putting the refill bag somewhere underneath the driver's seat and it makes the car smell fresh.
I just don't like that smell, but it's whatever everyone has their own association,
Elaine says you can also use bicarb in your machine to soften your towels, which is good for the machine. Also have to I used to have dealings with clothing technologists at the major retailers and they all told me fabric softeners are not good for your clothes.
Think of the extent of the marketing spin around those products.
Veronica says, I also gave up on softeners years ago due to the scrud. Here's another one. Janet in Hilton stopped using fabric softeners years ago because the washing machine repairman told her it's not good for the machine. It tends to stick in the pipes and clog the machine, and I don't miss it one bit. Trish is also a vinegar convert. She says, putting a little vinegar in your stay soft place in the washing machine helps keep the pipes, etc. clean. I use a product which is environmentally and washing machine friendly, not the shop bought softeners.
Ooh, I wonder what that is.
Do you want to send us a quick update, Trish, on which range you're using or what it is? Linda in Durbanville also has given up on softener. She'd like to know how much vinegar to use.
Do you put in a splash, a teaspoon? Probably a couple of tablespoons.
Okay, a quick pour.
A quick little
pour, okay. Yeah. And another message from someone saying, I've never used fabric softener ever. I've never seen the point. I hate the smell. I much prefer the smell of sun-dried washing.
Yes.
And if you shake it out before hanging, it will be soft. Okay, so there we go. That's quite a number of people.
So nobody came for us. They were converts. We're talking to kindreds here.
Apparently so. Okay. Before we leave the shopping expedition behind us, Wendy, you want to talk, and this is an issue we've spoken about in many permutations before, but a reminder, don't make assumptions when you're buying a product based on previous experience.
Yes.
The way it looks, where the packaging it's in, where it's placed in the supermarket.
Yes.
Just explain.
Okay, so we've spoken about this. Not all things that look like yogurt and are sitting in the yogurt place in the supermarket fridge are in fact yogurt. If they are called dairy snacks, they have too little protein, i.e. milk, to qualify for that yogurt description. If it's called Braaivors or just Vors, the meat content of that sausage is not premium enough to justify the Borivors description. And mm-hmm. here's a newish one, one that we haven't spoken about before. You may refer to the Nestle Milky Bar range as chocolate, but it's called Creamy White Confection for a reason, and that reason is there's no cocoa in
all. Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm. Read the labeling very carefully.
Creamy, but I mean, consumers don't talk dairy snacks and creamy white confections, do we?
No, yogurt and chocolates. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So, but just a reminder that those descriptions are not random. If it's not at one stage dairy ice cream that didn't actually have cream in it, that was all vegetable fat, had to be called.
Frozen dessert.
Yes. And then I think they must have pushed back so hard, those manufacturers, that they now allow it. And then it's got to say asterisk with vegetable fat or something like that. But for a while it was called frozen dessert for that reason.
Okay.
There was no dairy.
So if you notice that kind of somewhat unusual tweak on the term,
it's the product's been downgraded. You know, it's always to remove or reduce the premium ingredient.
Thank you for the warning.
Cape Talk.
Consumer Talk.
WhatsApp on 072-567-1567.
And just one more reason to give up fabric softener, because if you're using it as your washing water is grey water in the garden really doesn't appreciate the fabric softener, apparently. So there we go. Thank you.
And we didn't even mention the wasted cost.
Of course.
Because they're not cheap.
They're not cheap. All right. Let's move away from the shopping trolley and finish in the world of insurance and banking. And a couple of quick tips that you want to mention to us. What happens if you miss an insurance premium payment? What do you need to know, Wendy?
Okay. Where did I put that? Oh, there, right. According to the policyholder protection rules, insurers must give policyholders written notice that they haven't received the premium within 15 days of them becoming aware of the non-payment. And from the second month of the policy being taken out, they are required to give clients the benefit of a grace period of at least 15 days after the due date in which to make payment, during which time the policy doesn't lapse. So except for the first month, if you're paying this policy and life happens and you miss supposed to pay on the 26th, the debit order in advance, whatever. You've got 15 days at least. Look at your policy documents. Some insurers give you a bit more, but they have to by law give you at least 15 days to make that payment before, if something happens, they're going to repudiate and say, "I'm so sorry, your policy lapsed."
Okay, so I mean, obviously, we're not suggesting that anybody should not be making good on their payments.
Don't miss that 15-day grace period, is what I'm saying.
Be aware that you're entitled to it, and also be aware of the fact that they're obliged to alert you, because sometimes, as you said, life happens. The person who was responsible for the payments is incapacitated. Yep. In one case we've recently dealt with, and their partner wasn't aware of the fact a payment hadn't been made. For example, there are reasons why it might happen, but the insurer is obliged to A, alert you that the payment wasn't received, and B, give you 15 days grace. Wendy, beware the emailed invoice. And again, we've dealt with some really awful case studies of people who've been taken in like this. Just remind us.
I wanted to do it in the show, and we're getting through a lot because, you know, we tend to think, well, I've done that show, but I'm still getting hearing from people who've fallen from this. So whenever you are sent an invoice via email and as an attachment, please assume that a fraudster has intercepted the original email sent by the company which you've done business with and which you now owe money to, and that they've and we're not going to go into how they do it, but they hack into email servers. They alter everything stays the same, but they alter the invoice to put their banking details there. And so you pay them.
And your money's gone.
And then you still owe money to the actual company. Yeah. It is a horrific situation. It causes such drama, as you can imagine. It happened to me when I was buying a house. And that's the conveyancing attorneys were a favorite target, and they've kind of that
taken
profession.
Steps to you.
Yes, but a lot of any time anyone's done provided you with a service, and then they send you the invoice. Just wait. They like to. The forces like to do it on the weekend where you can't check. So wait. Don't ignore the number on that invoice. Google the company, phone them, and say, "I just want to check. What is your?" It happened with my tax consultant. Just we've changed our banking details. Please note. And I was like, "What?" So I phoned. And she said, "Yes, a lot of people have phoned." I said, "Well, I think we should have done SMSs or something else to alert people
that it is genuine."
Yes.
Yeah. So the advice is ignore the invoice.
Could
go
all
to
be
your
fake.
Phone book or your own Google the actual number of that company phone
just
and ask
check
for
what
their
your
banking details.
Ask for the
and
for
check that they match
accounts
up.
Department or whatever, or you know, it could be a small company, and just check that they match, because this is a horrible, horrible fraud.
Okay. And then the last one we want to deal with is a very quick reminder about making sure your bank has got your current details on file, Wendy, because it's really important that particularly your current residential address is correct.
Yes, because if they want to take action against you and action, say, towards repossessing your car, they have to send you what's called a Section 129 letter of demand. But their only obligation is to send that letter to your chosen address by registered post. In other words, the address you gave on your contract when you took out your credit card or your whatever, your home loan, and it could have changed. They don't have to make sure that you actually received it, right? So they can go before the magistrate and apply, or the judge or whatever, and apply for default judgment, which gives the sheriff the right to come around
and start collecting your goods.
On behalf of the bank and just repo your car. So, you know, you might think, oh, I don't want my bank to get hold of me, but you also don't want to, you do want to know when there's legal action against you in court, which is going to have a horrible impact on your life. So make sure that your contact address that the bank has for you is the correct current one.
Wendy, thank you. So many helpful tips you've shared with us both last week and this week again. Thank you very, very much.
Thank
and look
you.
Forward
it's
to having you
good.
Back with us next Wednesday.
Thanks, Pippa.